Welcome to Bad Wheel, a conversation about symbols, meaning, and practice. I'm Pintu, and with me is my co-host James. Welcome, James.
Afternoon, Pintu. How are you doing?
Doing good. We had a great conversation last time. I wanted to continue that conversation and talk a little bit about what types of meditation I do, you do, give our audience a good taste of some of the examples from the taxonomy that we talked about last time. So last time we covered the different meditation types and the four different meditation taxonomy definitions. So to recap, and again, this is just a recap. If you want more information, check out our previous episode. There's four different ways at a very, very high level. And we're going to give examples today of meditation types from material engagement, where you use an object that holds your concentration, body engagement, where the object of the meditation is your body, contemplative engagement, which thought or memory is the object, and then empty engagement, which is object-less concentration. So you're not really concentrating on a particular thing, it's more empty. I would love to hear from you, and then I'll give a few examples myself of which are some meditation types, which are some meditation techniques that you use today, and where do they fall in taxonomy?
Well, I believe the one that we wanted to go over today from my end is I have a basic walking meditation. And for the walking meditation, first, there's a note up top. This is a modern translation of traditional walking meditation. So again, a lot of the stuff that we talk about here are more modern practices with reference to the traditional practice, because we don't want to get stuck in the traditional mindset of what something has to be. So a walking meditation that people may have heard of, you know, they might be thinking of, oh, I go to, say, a Deer Creek monastery for a day, and we're going to have a big group walking meditation, and it's going to be in silence. This is a modern adaptation of that, in which you can try it weekly, daily. It has only one prerequisite, and it only has one rule. So the prerequisite is that you have to have a destination. You have to have a place that you're walking to and that you can walk back from. I'm going to talk about like the ideal circumstances. So ideally, it's about 20 minutes away. Again, give or take where you are and you know, what your physical levels are. And you should be able to sit comfortably in that place, unbothered, not bothering anyone else. So this place can be a cafe, it can be a park bench, it can be a library. If you're, you know, have access to the ocean or a river, again, it's any place where you could just go and sit quietly, peacefully for a moment and then walk back. And then I'll get into the one hard rule. So this meditation functions in three parts. It's you can think of it having three acts. And the goal of this meditation is that we're not going to try the entire time. So the first part of this meditation, it's okay for you to wear headphones. You can put in your AirPods and you can listen to a podcast. You can listen to music. You can contemplate something. You know, sometimes when you want to get out and walk around, you're, you know, trying to work through some thoughts. Well, this first part of the meditation, the destination part, everything's allowed. You can do any of these things. You can think about stuff. You cannot think about stuff. You can listen to music. You cannot listen to music. That's it. And all we're really doing in this initial section is we're warming up our body. This is just a physiological, you know, you're getting your blood pumping, right? You're breathing through your lungs. And so you're kind of prepping yourself, but again, you're not even trying to prep yourself. You're just on a walk to this destination. And let's say this destination is a cafe. When you get to the cafe, you can order yourself a coffee or a tea, you know, or whatever you want. Again, it's all allowed. We're not pressing. We're not trying too hard. And then you're going to go and you're going to sit on that park bench next to that river, wherever it is. And you're just going to, in this second section, which 10, 15 minutes is about the right idea. You just want to sit and observe the world. You know, if you're in a park, you're looking at trees and the birds in the trees and people walking by. Again, you're not really trying to do anything, but you are gradually opening up your awareness just by paying attention to the outside world. You're extroverting your consciousness in terms of looking out and around. And a little side note here in terms of if you were having a contemplative thought on your way there, that means you were introverted in terms of your thinking. You want to use that kind of opening sitting, that opening, you know, part of your sitting to wrap up that thought. You kind of want to like conclude whatever it is that you were ruminating on. And then again, work on that process of moving your intention from that internal thought into something external. And again, it can be as simple as, you know, there's a reason people like to go and watch birds. You can just go and watch some birds, but it gives you a place for your focus to go, right? If there's, I had, interestingly, this happened to me the other day. There were two biplanes flying over. And I thought that was fascinating because you don't often see,
biplanes.
But it's also fascinating because if you can look up and notice something, you can then also look around and see if anyone else noticed. And it can be revealing sometimes the amount of people who had no clue that the planes are flying over, because again, their awareness is very, you know, closed and they're maybe having a very tight personal conversation with someone.
Yeah.
We're trying to exit that. That's the middle part of this, is we're just trying to be aware and open to the world. And so we've got a little bit of like a body, a little bit of a contemplative, but what we're really trying to get to is an empty meditation, but it's going to happen on our way home. And here's where our one rule comes in. The headphones can't go back in. The headphones have to stay out.
Right.
They have to remain in your pocket, because the kind of ideal version of this is if you can get your attention focused outward and on the environment, if you can then just sit up and start walking, and now you're moving through this environment that you're paying very active attention to. And that's it. You don't have to try to do anything. You can just simply walk and just pay attention to the world.
To what's going on around you.
And you can stop. If there's a friendly dog that comes by and wants to say hi, you can say hi to a dog. Like, all of these things are fine. And then you're going to walk back, and it'll be, again, an approximately, you know, 20-minute walk back. So all in, it's about an hour, but you'll have kind of successfully stretched your attention within that hour. You've gotten a little, you know, again, physical exercise. You've thought about something, perhaps contemplated something. But most importantly, you've taken a moment to try to widen your awareness and then try to be active with inside that big open awareness.
No, it's amazing. It's amazing. So I want to talk about my experience with it, but before I do, I want to ask your experience with it. How often do you do that? And what have you gained from such a meditation? Like, what's been your benefit that you've experienced?
I do it regularly, weekly, sometimes multiple times a week, depending on the weather. I can do it daily. I think what's most interesting about this, in terms of when we talk about effects and again, lasting effects, is that the effect is most notable right after you've done it. You kind of remain open and aware for a little bit. But also you might have, in my case, a little extra energy to apply concentration to something else. So after kind of taking that moment to open up your awareness, to widen it, and now sometimes I kind of like to think about alternating between concentration and awareness, like breathing in and breathing out, where if our awareness is kind of, you know, it doesn't actually matter. You can consider it breath in or breath out, whatever analogy works best for you. You know, so I'm going to do breathe in, big open awareness, and then breathe out, concentration, exertion. So for me, it's an exercise that helps my attention very directly in the moment. What I will say is that the reason that you want to practice regularly and why you try to meditate all the time is that when you wake up the next morning, you might still feel groggy. It's not gonna have a big effect there. In fact, I'll even say, like today out in Los Angeles, we had a May gray morning. It's bright and sunny now. All the marine layer burned off, but it was gray and overcast and cool. And you don't wake up with, you know, maybe as much energy on mornings like that. This is not going to affect that. What it will do, though, is that if you are feeling bleg, this process, especially having these multiple components where we're activating our body and also trying to activate our mind.
Yes.
It can be a more immediate remedy in terms of, all right, how do I get out of this funk?
Nice. And do you typically do this before, I don't know, like a heads down time for something that you need to accomplish?
No, typically where I do it is I do it mid morning, because that's usually the time of day when I want to actually get up and move around. So if I've been working on something in the morning in terms of like, in terms of that idea of like being heads down on something, then usually you need a break. If especially you're doing maybe something creative, you exert yourself, right? Again, like breathing. I need to relax now. I need to have an off cycle. This can help you off cycle. And so usually that's when I use it. It's actually after something that I've been working on, not necessarily before, but what it can do is, again, because you let a bunch of stuff go, something can pop up on your way back. Again, but you're not trying to – the key on maintaining the empty thing is, again, like you don't want to – if you have an idea that's an internal idea, you're trying not to have that idea on the walk back. Again, you're just trying to be in the environment. And so the stimulus that you would get isn't usually from like a memory or something you've been ruminating on. Instead, it'd be, again, seeing biplanes up in the sky and be like, oh, that's interesting. So any quote unquote inspiration would come from paying attention to the world. Especially, I think it's fascinating when you look at something that you think that maybe you've seen hundreds or thousands of times before, and suddenly you see it. It's almost like the first time, and you see new and interesting detail. That's what this does, is it refreshes kind of your brain's mapping of the world.
Absolutely. So where in the taxonomy does the walking meditation fit, right? For our audience, there's a four.
The goal.
Where does it fit for you?
Yeah. This is technically for me an empty meditation, because that's where we're trying to end up at. And again, the challenge on empty meditations is it's a meditation where you're trying not to try. You're not trying to force something. So you're not, and those can be challenging to get to. And so why this is a modern adaptation of, say, a traditional walking meditation is because it's trying to take all these components and use them in concert with each other. Again, what are our first two stages? The first stage is awakening our body on a walk. I'm not specifically, you can focus on your breath and on your steps, like on that first part of the walk. It's fine, because that's the whole point. Everything's allowable. That's why there's only one rule, is having the headphones off on the way back. But these first two sections, you're giving yourself allowance to open up. And
yes,
once you're there, the idea of, and this is again getting us away from maybe the sitting meditation where you sit and you open up, but then you're still sat, right? You still are where you are. This gets that openness that you can feel during a sitting meditation, but it puts it in motion. And there's just a different feeling you get from being really paying a lot of attention to the environment as you move through it.
That's awesome. No, so I wanted to share a little bit of, so I took your walking meditation sample of how you would like what you do, right? Tried it out. So I did this on Sunday. Yeah, this on Sunday. And I figured, well, you know, this is a nice area. We'll, you know, walk to a location. So the location for those who are listening is in Palo Alto, California at Stanford. So beautiful, nice campus, which, to be completely fair and honest, I don't really care for. But I found a location and I said, okay, well, hey, you know what? I haven't been to this part of the campus. Let me walk over here. It looks like there might be a cafe here. So I'm going to follow James's instructions and do as he would do. So I found a location, looked it up on the map, and put on my headphones. And I listened to an audiobook for that period in time and concentrated on the audiobook and was just walking, looking at what I was walking through, but also, you know, to your point, getting situated in terms of my physical body and getting it in motion, right? Perfect, totally fine. And I couldn't find the cafe for the life of me. So I found another place, which it was like it's not really a park. It had like a bunch of rose bushes, which were gorgeous with a bunch of benches around, trees, and, you know, students walking by and not too many cars, but some cars. And I took off my headphones, wrapped up my, okay, I'm done with the book now. So let me just sit and pay attention. So taking a look at your instructions, and I remember them clearly in my head, be in the moment, listen, look, smell, and I could smell the bushes. I could hear, watch the birds, hear people walking. It was not particularly warm that day, so just FYI, which I was just not happy about, but it's fine. I was outside. And so I wrote down a few notes. So I noticed the birds, and I noticed certain little things that wouldn't really notice otherwise, right? So there's this one bush that would keep going to. I'm like, well, that must be their nest, right? Or why are they all situated there? And then I noticed types of people walking by. I'm like, that's interesting. So that's definitely a student. That definitely is not. So there's a little interesting thing that I, you know, kept observing, which was people, their gait, what they were wearing to help me determine where they were coming from or where they're headed. There's just a lot of other fascinating stuff that I noticed, which I wouldn't notice otherwise. The other thing, the other thing I noticed when I was sitting was, because of my, and I'll get into my sitting meditation that I do daily, because of my sitting meditation, again, I'm sitting down on the bench, I'm trying to hold still. And I noticed myself, I'm like, why am I trying to hold still? So that was very strange because I noticed myself doing this and I'm like, I don't have to. I'm not tied to this. I can look around. I'm good. But the important part was being mindful and thoughtful about what I was paying attention to, not in my own thoughts, right? So the thoughts that came in my head was based on observation that I was making. And the observation I started to notice was not also the people around me and the things that were happening around me, but eventually, like I said, I started noticing, like, why am I still, right? So then eventually I started noticing my own body, what it was doing, how it was behaving. And it's not like I wanted to correct it, but it was just like, okay, well, it's interesting, right? I'm sitting still. I don't need to. Then I started walking back. This was very interesting. So when I started walking back, and again, don't have my headphones on, I'm paying attention to people. So then I started seeing people and like, oh, well, that's definitely visitors because you don't really see. So I started noticing that my brain, when I noticed something, I had to put like a story behind it. It was just very strange to me. I'm like, well, this must be a family. And this must be like, so there was just a lot of this going on throughout. And then as I started walking more and more, I actually then got back to the fact of like, wait a minute, I'm actually recognizing my own body reactions to my observations. So I would feel like my breath would be either anticipation, like for example, a biker is coming by, I'm like, okay, like I have to be careful, I'm not going to get run over by this biker. So my body and my breath would actually react, and I actually noticed that. And then I started noticing things that I would never notice at Stanford because, you know, like I said, don't really care for it much, but you don't notice it until you actually just look, which is the bushes were perfectly groomed. The trees were actually beautiful. The grass was always groomed. And like, I'm thinking about like, how often do they freaking cut this thing? Like it's perfect to a point where I'm like, this is like, I've never noticed this before. Right. And then you start noticing, like, people were very trusting. They would just leave their stuff anywhere. And you don't notice that until you are just only paying attention to what you're walking. So, I think it was just very fascinating to me to do that. At the same time, be physical. Because typically when I'm doing my own sitting meditation, it is very, it's one spot. Your concentration as opposed to empty engagement. But even the empty engagement made me recognize things about my own behavior and my own interactions with the environment.
Well, and now I do have an answer to your earlier question in terms of, we'll call it results for lack of a better term. Doing this more consistently in terms of doing it more regularly, what does that do? Sometimes, and I'm glad you asked how often I do it, because I can realize hearing your account, there is a big difference between the first time you do something and say the 100th time you've done something, or the 1,000th or the 10,000th time, right? You've done something. So first of all, I'm going to ask you a question and then I'll keep responding. On your way back, or did you notice where your eyes were on the way back versus where your eyes were on the way there in terms of whether you were looking up or down or?
On the way there, I was actually doing my best to divide my attention to two things, which was listening as well as looking. Actually, I was looking around, but I was looking straight, right? I wasn't looking down. I was actually looking straight and actually observing people. And that's when I started noticing like, oh, wow, this is actually really, really well-kept area. Like, okay, that's nice. But I was actually still observing. So my concentration was split, unfortunately, but it was still looking straight.
Well, and part of this is, again, we're going to all have different levels of health and levels of maintenance. And so I'm just going to say you have generally good posture as someone who also runs a lot. What you'll notice a lot of times, though, on these this initial section, if you're listening to something, whether it's again music, podcast, audiobook, or you're contemplating, your eyes will move down, and or you're like the amount of, again, as you said, your attention will get divided. The amount of what you're actually paying attention to will just be a very limited path in front of you. And then on the way back, again, I try to say that you don't ever want to, again, force anything in this meditation. But on the way back, having your eyes up, having a neutral chin, having a neutral spine, and having a nice flat sense of vision is important. And if you do this kind of more often, you start to notice the difference between, hey, when I am thinking internally, my eyes do, or my chin moves, or my shoulders move, you will notice parts of your body that will kind of like retreat or retract into a sort of like internal, the thinker pose. And then the other broader comment in terms of, again, getting to this idea of what is an empty meditation. There was lots of narration as you were, talking about yours in terms of, again, like the story. Again, not trying to force anything. But the idea is that when we practice more regularly, that the narration goes away. So typically I try to remove the narrator in the singing portion.
Okay.
Which is, again, a challenge where this is where it can benefit people to do sitting meditation first in terms of how can you, get to having empty thoughts or letting things go. So for some people in that second section, yes, you might want to follow your breath and do various exercises you would do in a normal sitting meditation in terms of how can I empty my thinking. And because, again, the end, the goal that we would be trying to get to, if we were to say this as a goal in terms of fitting into a taxonomy of what an empty meditation really should be, is that it's this idea of, kind of, you spoke about it right at the very end, where, and we'll get into your meditation here in a second. It's the idea of being able to get into that very open and aware mindset. And then, yes, now getting active and moving through the world. And again, you can stop and like look at something and inspect something. But again, you still want to let the story go of the sneakers somebody is wearing and what that may or may not mean.
Yeah. No, I think that was the challenge, right? Is having a narration / having an opinion / trying to make logical sense of what's happening to the world around me, which was very hard to let go of.
Right. And here's, I think, the last sort of commentary I want to make here, and then we can move on. Because you mentioned something that's very important in terms of your brain is always going to make an assumption. It is always going to provide you an answer. You're going to receive a certain amount of stimulus, and it's just going to provide the most logical answer that it has based off of its image repertoire. So when we talk about what do you gain from repetition, I actually think that's part of what you gain from repetition, is that when you're more in your environment, more paying attention, more being in the moment, more being aware,
yes,
the less surprising things can be, because you start seeing them or recognizing them as something that's either, more frequent or not odd, or or whatever it is, if an extraordinary circumstance happens, again, always just remember that your brain, no matter what, will give you an answer. No matter how absurd or how completely wrong it's going to be, it's going to say, hey, this must be what's happening next. And when we get back to this idea of there's form and there's meaning, again, you're getting all this meaning that's being pulled from your brain when you see form. And you're trying to get to a point where you saw a rabbit run behind a fence and then it didn't pop out the other side like you would expect, maybe like the continuation of movement to illustrate. And you might see, I'll just do the dog an example again. The dog might be really confused. Like, why didn't the rabbit pop out? Well, and then you can have all of these answers in your head of, well, it could have done, you know, all of these probabilities because you're aware that these probabilities
are possible,
exist. However, if you only think there's like, again, I'm just being silly here, there's only one, if you think there's only one, you know, possibility of like, why did the rabbit not come out the other side? And the answer is, oh, it disappeared. You know, like it vanished.
But I think the challenge, right, for the empty engagement and object-less concentration and walking meditation is a good example of that. And I'll get into a little bit of you know, being the blankful portion, right, is how do you not, and it takes practice, right? And how do you not make sure you put meaning to that form? And you know, that's one aspect, one way of doing empty engagement is in my at least in my head. And I'll practice it. And I'll keep practicing more and more. See if it gets better. The one that I practice, which I want to kind of get into a little bit, and it's really around more the body engagement, right? And combination in my head, it's more of a body engagement / empty engagement together. And I'll tell you a little bit of Vipassana, which is a form of meditation in Buddhism, and what Buddha taught, right? It's not Buddhism as a religion, but it's the way that he meditated. So the intent is for Vipassana, which is a sitting meditation. It takes some practice to get there, but there is a specific concentration around your own body, your breath, the sensations from the top of your head to the tip of your feet. And the intention, I'm making this really simple. Obviously, there's a lot more to it, but the intention is for you to sit still and focus on the sensations that are happening around in your body. From, again, like I said, top of your head to the bottom of your feet, and do that for this. So the recommendation is you should do this for an hour straight, sitting still in a pose that is comfortable to you, where you can actually sit still. And at the end of it, you're supposed to be ending with metta, which is positive thoughts, gratitude, and wrapping up your practice. So the reason I say this is also an empty engagement is because, and maybe that's the wrong term. I think it goes back to what you were just alluding to earlier, James, which is you want to focus on the form, your sensations, without any meaning tied to it, right? So for example, if you've done this type of meditation where you are sitting still, and you are trying to concentrate on your body or your breath and or both, right? Obviously, your body will start reacting in certain ways. And it is a natural tendency for yourself to react to that in the way that your body is reacting, right? So for example, you might get like an itch somewhere, or you may get your legs are now falling asleep, right? And you want to move them. So how do you ensure that you are sitting still and paying attention still to the breath, body sensations that are happening throughout your body. So the way that they recommend is actually having the empty engagement and just letting things be as they are and observing them as they are. So that's the meditation that I do about once a day for an hour.
Well, and I think when we talk about this, you know, taxonomy, again, the part that we should clarify is that what we're trying to talk about here is how can we classify the object that we're in terms of, again, this idea of when we try to get to this idea of empty meditation, that's, I think, more of like the Platonic ideal of meditation. But, you know, one of the reasons we kind of just threw this out there is, you know, you talk about, you know, Vipassana as something you try to do an hour a day, but originally it's a major commitment, right? Where you have to actually go and do a week long retreat.
Yes.
And so how can we get to more modern daily practices versus going to, like, you know, join a, you know, monastic lifestyle or a commune or, there's various, places out here that do meditation in which I'll go and it'll be like a guided meditation. And usually the reason I go to a guided meditation is I like someone's voice and how they're, you know, maybe talking us through the meditation. But then the subject matter I might not be a fan of, because again, it might start talking about, gods and so on and so forth.
Right.
And so, so our aim is kind of to take a look at some of these traditional things and figure out how we can more pragmatically
apply them.
And so when we keep saying meditation, we're very much going back to this bad wheel idea of, all right, we're trying to solve dukkha and we're trying to use the Eightfold Path. And there's this section called meditation and it's a balance. I just always return to this. It's a balance between awareness, concentration, and diligence. And you can even think of that in the axle wheel analogy, in terms of, you can think of awareness as a wheel and concentration as a wheel. And you can think of diligence as the axle that connects them, because that's what diligence is. Diligence is it's the control between concentration and awareness.
And awareness.
Right.
Right.
And so when we talk about some of these, again, we're trying to figure out, like, what's the object and how can we meditate more regularly in terms of being, here in the moment, and then also being able to engage with the moment. So let's just, again, like, revisit some simple examples. With material meditation, we talked a lot about, I like the music example the best. You know, people who become, you know, very good musicians, I love watching great musicians. You know, I love watching, there's a Primus, Find a Drummer, New Drummer, nice. Derby that's been going on in YouTube. And I love just watching these drummers come in and audition and play. And when we talk about someone getting into the flow, that's meditation. That's someone is they're very much in the moment, and then they're acting with intent in the moment. They have an object which focuses them. And then when body, I think you mentioned it last time, the perfect Platonic example is yoga. Yoga is the very definition of body meditation. And then when we get into sitting meditation, that is, there's different forms of sitting meditation. You mentioned metta, which people might know as loving kindness.
Yes.
That one is a thought-based process, because you're trying to.
That is true. That's more contemplative. Well, you're trying to project
Right. Yes. Thoughts, world peace, whatever it is, out into to
the world.
World. Yes.
And to everyone you know. And
right. You know, again, the practice of Zazen, Zen sitting meditation, that is very distinctly our most Platonic empty meditation, because there you are just supposed to sit and you're supposed to, you know, empty your mind. And what I think is interesting about your, you know, Vipassana experience is the original version of it is more of a limit experience, because it is a challenge to right. endure a full week's worth of.
Technically 10 days, but sure. Let's call it a week.
Well, no, that's fine. Even better. It's 10 days. It's all day. It's taxing on you physically, right? And so there's a certain place that you push yourself to. And these limit experiences, whether it be extended sitting sessions or here's a body one that gets you into an ecstatic state. The whirling dervishes, right, are a form of people who would, you know, a practice where you spin, right, to get into some form of like ecstatic state. Obviously, famously, people will out of, say, Harvard, there used to be a psychedelic club, and you have all sorts of stories about, you know, we don't have time for it right now, but people like Ram Dass were people who. The interesting story about Ram Dass, which we don't have time for right now, but how Ram Dass became Ram Dass is essentially someone who found, again, or embraced more of this meditative lifestyle after feeling something, you know, like, again, touching something underneath a hallucinogenic experience, and then trying to find it more naturally, because no matter what, you always come down. So part of this idea on you going from, right, like a 10-day retreat to
right.
an hour a day is how do you take this limit experience that's really intensive that you have to let in, like, because you needed to recover, right, after you came back.
Yeah, no, it definitely was taxing. I think taxing mentally as well as emotionally, right, to be taken out of your natural habitat, if you will, and to be put into a completely different place, which is very, what's the word I'm looking for? Non-engaging at all. So your focus and attention is on nothing but the limit experience, right? If you want to reuse that term, but yeah, that's the important part. And so to bring that back into your day-to-day routine, the hope is that the students that learn this meditation technique will continue to follow it at least once a day. They actually recommend twice a day for an hour each. I can't dedicate. Well, first, it's really around time, right? But it's also the second is my physical body and mentally, I'm so exhausted at the end of the day that it's very hard for me to actually get into what the meditation is trying to teach us and tell us to do, which is concentration and body engagement. Well, not body engagement, but just empty engagement in a focusing on your body. It's impossible for me to do at the end of the day.
Well, and this is why offline, I had originally recommended my modified walking meditation as a potential replacement for your afternoon session, in terms of, again, it's meant to be a meditation in which you don't try, but you get, you know, whatever, some stuff in. And I, you know, the last thing I kind of want to say about this idea of, because we've introduced it on limit experiences, is these are also traumas. You know, somebody dies, you get in a car wreck, something happens where it shakes you, right? So in the positive sense, when people have a revelatory experience, the word you'll hear is satori, right? You have this glimpse. Mm-hmm. The best English word here would be glimpse for satori. Again, the challenge is it's so energetic that you can't maintain it. And this becomes one of the, if we want to consider dragons that people chase in Buddhism, people chase Satori. They chase this quote unquote enlightened state of mind because they confuse Satori with Nirvana. They think Satori is Nirvana. Where again, like, well, no, Nirvana is just again, like the state of mind of being actively engaged in the here and now with right. And so we've been trying to talk about this idea of like, what can that with be with in terms
correct,
of,
correct. But, yeah. But it goes back to what you were saying earlier, which is it's the middle ground between awareness and concentration, using the diligence very appropriately to kind of go back and forth. Right. And it's that practice, which, so interestingly enough, you're kind of mentioning the whole Satori thing. The first time that I went to the 10-day camp afterwards, I was trying to chase that specific feeling of like, oh my God, this is like, that's, I didn't really get to it. This is impossible. But after the second time I went, he drilled into the fact of like, you're actually not trying to do that. Instead, you need to just let what your body is able to give you, just let it be and observe it. And don't be happy about it. Don't be upset about it. Just be in the middle, right? So be in that state of observation, empty engagement with no meaning to the form, just focus on the form of just being.
And I think it's important to note here too that these quote unquote, you know, mind-blowing experiences, again, they can be positive. You know, we can talk about, there's this thing known as the theory of positive disintegration. That's for another time. But essentially, the short story on this is that the shock that you can experience, so Satori can be positive, can also be negative. This, the idea of this shock to the system can be very helpful initially. Because again, it can help you change like a bunch of stuck habits or viewpoints, right? If something happens to like, we'll do the car wreck analogy, you know, oh my God, you know, my life is different. My world is different. Nothing will ever be the same, right? Like you have all of these thoughts and what they, and so you have this jarring of assumptions. And so this initial jarring can be good, but back to what you're, instructor was saying in terms of like, you have to then get into a path of regular maintenance or else you just going to need to get jarred again. And then you're going to need to recover and then you get jarred again and you get recover. And now you're in a bad cycle.
Right. Even though you do practice on a day-to-day basis for whatever it is. So that limit experience and that trauma that you go through and then you don't do it anymore and you go through it again because you stop practicing, I think there's something to be said that you need a refresher, right? And it's one of the reasons why, even though after the 10-day course in August of 2024, I did go back, not for another 10 days, but I went back for 3 days and it was a good enough refresher for me to be like, ah, yes, I got the essence back. Let me bring it to my day-to-day.
Well, and I also think the, you know, again, this emphasis of, I just kind of almost want us always to get to this place where we think of everything can be meditation. And one of the reasons to even have this idea of different types of meditation is to prevent that staleness or whatever from setting in, that if you can try out different forms of meditation, if you can, you know, like I have multiple different types of practices that I kind of cycle through. I think that's very helpful. And because at the end of the day, our goal trying to be here now, and then also what, you know, to not just be present, then also try to do something with that presence, going back to that potter's wheel analogy of like, cool, I'm present. Can I also like form this clay into a bowl?
Yeah, no, I think, so I know I covered Vipassana, you covered the walking meditation. There's a few other ones that I can just list out that I know you and I've talked about, which are part of these. And, you know, like, for example, actually, this is kind of funny, but I really like the fact that one of the things you had mentioned to me, which is when you are doing whatever you're doing that is more of a housework, house chore, whatever you want to call it, just focus on the thing and not try to be in your own thought. And it's actually surprising to me when I do this, it's weird. It's like an odd benefit that I don't realize that it's happening. But afterwards, whatever I try to think about, or if I need to concentrate on something or do something else, that's actually more less awareness and more concentration, it's actually easier to concentrate on the thing that I need to focus on.
You also fundamentally do a better job. So when we use the expression doing the dishes, if you're doing the dishes absentmindedly, you might miss, stuff. You might not clean the dish very well. Also, you will do the task slower because you're distracted. So yeah, the idea on doing the dishes is if you place all your attention there and your focus and your concentration, and we also use this expression sometimes as an expression of diligence, because there's the Thich Nhat Hanh version, which is the be very present and do the dishes. But you and I occasionally will also use it in reference to not letting the dishes pile up and doing them more regularly to make the task less of a quote unquote chore.
Right. And you can separate doing the dishes in both ways, and they're actually both beneficial and are actually, it's like the yin and yang, right? Because the portion is you don't want it to pile up, which means doing the dishes in one terminology you're using is forming a habit, right? And forming a practice or having that diligence of doing the thing. And then the other aspect, which you mentioned, is focusing the attention on the thing you're trying to do and being present. Like you mentioned earlier, what do you do with that presence, right? Is very, very important. So the other ones that you've mentioned to me before, which I've tried, which is, observe an object close by, observe an object very far away, and just observe it as it is with no like words or, other thoughts behind it.
Let's maybe use that example next time, because we can talk through the quick 5-minute example on how to do this, because it's another modern practice that you should be able to do anywhere.
It's true. You should be using, yeah. So we could talk about next time. The thing we didn't get to, which is essentially a lot of what we have been talking about, is being what I call blank, full, right? And I, at a very high level, and we can describe it more next time, is what do you do with that presence, or what do you do with the way that you want that form to be built, or what you're adding into the thought, the presence that you have today. So more on that for sure.
Yeah, I think we can have a pretty in-depth conversation on how blankfulness can be both achieved, but then also, yeah, what you can do with it. And because it's a nice linguistic game, you can insert different various words where blank is,
Correct.
Like joyful, etc.
Thank you for walking us through some of the meditation techniques that you've used. And I appreciate you sharing the walking meditation with me as another way of me exploring another way of doing meditation and diligence, which has actually been enlightening for me to see what my body and mind is doing at the same time.
Well, and thank you for sharing your experience with Vipassana.
And we'll sign off for today, and looking forward to our next session.
Cheers, everyone.